It's 7 minutes now past 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, here today filling in for Joy Cardine. Last night was the last night of the 2012 Democratic National Convention, and with it, the big speeches from President Obama, Vice President Biden, and Wisconsin Representative Tammy Baldwin. All of those speeches have been greatly anticipated by a lot of folks, and each candidate was expected to deliver the goods. But did they succeed? We'll be taking up that question this hour, and we'd like to hear from you, too. Also, later this hour, we'll have some reaction to the numbers from the August jobs report. They're slated to be released about 7:30 or so. Our guest this hour is Charles Franklin, a visiting professor of law and public policy and director of the Marquette University Law School Poll. He is also the co-founder of Pollster.com and the founder of PollsandVotes.com. So what did you think of what President Obama and Vice President Biden had to say last night? Did they make a convincing case to you for 4 more years? Or do you think it's time for them to move on? Did Tammy Baldwin win your vote for the U.S. Senate last night? Which issue is most important to you? The debt, jobs, health care? Did you hear about it last night? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also join in on email. That address is talk@wpr.org. And you can also follow the Joy Cardine Show on Facebook. Charles Franklin joins us in the studio, and good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you along. Great to have you here in person as well. Let's just start off with your general reaction. You've been watching and listening to an awful lot of speeches lately, I imagine. Last night was the big finish for the Democratic National Convention. How did it go? Was it as big a finish as everybody was hoping for?
Yeah, I think it was a big finish, but the arc of the Democratic Convention I thought was interesting. So on Monday night with Michelle Obama, you have the testimony from a spouse about the character and the heart of a president. We saw that with Ann Romney at the Republican Convention. And then for the Democrats, Bill Clinton is this sort of special orator, if you will, on Wednesday night, laying out a policy-filled speech that was a defense of the Obama record. So that part had been taken care of. What was interesting to me last night was, first of all, Vice President Biden did what vice presidents normally do, testify to the quality of the president. But President Obama's speech was interesting in its combative nature, in the way he directly challenged voters to compare the Romney and Republican plan with Democratic plans going forward. He did less to defend the record, as Bill Clinton had already done, and more to set a fairly stark contrast. It was interesting in comparison with 8 years ago when he gave his debut speech at the convention, talking about not Republican Americans or Democratic Americans, but Americans, a very bipartisan conciliatory speech in his debut, to change, and the focus of that 4 years ago to this year, some vision and certainly some policy for the future, but much more of a partisan contrast with the opposition.
So obviously he had any number of ways he could have gone with this speech. I mean, he could have been, as you say, you know, kind of combative. He could have been more aspirational. He could have any. Why this path?
I think there's several reasons for it, all related to the campaign. One reason was that many commentators on all sides had viewed Romney's speech as one that was focused on broad aspirations but did not detail policy proposals very much. And so I think in part the Obama campaign wanted the direct contrast with policy specifics and especially their framing of what Republican policy would be. So that's one part of it. But I think the other part is, again, a criticism that really is bipartisan of President Obama, has been the issue of he says he wants to be reelected, but why does he want to be reelected? Other than let us finish what we started, what does that really mean? And so by specifically talking about jobs and energy and education and foreign policy, the sort of central core of his speech last night, he laid out some specifics on those things. Critics will say it wasn't detailed enough. Others would say it already sounded too much like a State of the Union speech that focuses more on policy. But it certainly gave his speech a different tenor, more like his State of the Union speeches, less like the sort of lofty abstractions that we heard 8 years ago in that inaugural, that first speech that he gave at the convention.
And speaking of that, you know, one of the things we've heard an awful lot about is the whole hope and change thing, like what happened to it. And he addressed sort of both of those last night, and we've got a clip here we're going to play. Where, and this is one of the short clips where he talks about that idea of change.
If you turn away now, if you buy into the cynicism that the change we fought for is impossible, well, change will not happen.
So change will not happen. I mean, it doesn't sound quite as easy as it did 4 years ago or 8 years ago.
No, it certainly doesn't. I think, in one sense, that's probably the reality that almost every president discovers once they're in office, is that the things they thought they could accomplish are much harder to actually accomplish. But for President Obama in particular, rallying the troops, getting the same level of enthusiasm and turnout this fall that change theme engendered 4 years ago is a big challenge. And so I think under these circumstances, reminding his supporters that getting what they want is not easy, it's not as simple as just having him in office, I think that's a theme that both appeals to the base but also explains to the base why they need to turn out, why they have to stay committed despite any kind of frustrations that they experience.
It was also interesting, as there was sort of an arc to his speech too, at least from where I was hearing. And, you know, somewhere early, midway through, it was sort of Obama, very controlled, very, you know, just sort of even-keeled, I guess I would say. And right towards the end, when he started talking about hope, and he was telling a story about seeing some soldiers back from Iraq and the travails they were going through as they came back from the country, and he kind of ended on this note, this hope note.
The scripture that ours is a future filled with hope. And if you share that faith with me, if you share that hope with me, I ask you tonight for your vote.
And right at the end there, he really amped it up.
Right. I think the end, you know, the call, if you will, is one of the terms that's used in especially preaching, but in speeches more generally, that not only do you want to end on an up note, but you also want to end on this sort of high aspiration note. And, you know, this is an area where the president's earlier career embodied a lot of speeches that had that sort of element. And tonight, or last night, they balanced the policy issue and the combative part with a closing that came back to that theme and provided the positive emotional uplift at the end in many ways, his speeches have been famous for.
And before we go to the break, we've got a weather break coming up, and then we'd like to get to some calls. And that number, by the way, is 800-642-1234. But I was struck yesterday as I was listening to newscasts throughout the day about this continuing story that took on a life of its own about having the speech indoors or outdoors, and does it matter? And the president made a conference call and all of this. And I got to ask you, is that just much ado about nothing, or was there something there?
I think it's the kind of much ado about nothing that we have a lot of, again, in both sides. There turned out there were some thunderstorms in the area last night. I actually went and checked the radar in the evening
to see. I bet a lot of people did.
But, you know, in the big picture of things, I can't believe that any votes are going to change because of whether it was indoors or outdoors. The one thing about having it indoors was that you had a packed facility of true believers and supporters, the convention delegates. So that made it a more concentrated responsive audience, if you will. If it had been outdoors with, I think, 65,000 people or something, the spectacle would have been greater, and maybe the outreach to non-convention delegates would have been greater. But again, I think we're writing a process story here about the machinations of how things are done. The substance of the speech, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, how you feel about Governor Romney's proposals versus Obama's, those are the things that are going to matter a lot more by the time we get to November, rather than whether a speech was indoors or outdoors.
Charles Franklin is our guest this hour, visiting professor of law and public policy and director of the Marquette University Law School Poll. We're talking with him about the speeches from last night's Democratic National Convention. We're starting out talking about President Obama's speech. We'd like to hear from you, too. 800-642-1234. If you would like to weigh in, did the president succeed? Did he get his message out? Or was it just more of the same old thing? 800-642-1234. Taking a look at Wisconsin weather for today, it's going to be cloudy and cool throughout Wisconsin. Expect scattered showers. Highs will be in the mid to upper 60s. And then tonight, decreasing clouds back down into the 40s. Tomorrow, sunny and mild with a slight chance of showers later on. Highs around 70s, lows back down into the 40s. I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 20 minutes now after 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine. Charles Franklin is with us this hour. We are talking about the 2012 Democratic National Convention, and more specifically, how it all wound up last night with speeches from Representative Tammy Baldwin, Vice President Joe Biden, and, of course, President Obama. We'd like to hear from you, too. What did you think about the speeches last night? Do you think the president made a convincing case for another term in office? And what issues matter to you during this election year? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's head to the phones right now. Doug is with us from Oshkosh. Hi, Doug.
Good morning. I would just like to say a couple of things. I was a little disappointed in his speech last night and unfortunately did not make it to the uplifting end that you guys spoke about because both my wife and I fell asleep during the speech.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So I guess that speaks to the fact that I didn't see the fire that I saw in Clinton's speech the night before. And generally, my wife and I have actually gotten away from voting Republican, and we've actually, you know, over the last 10 years have probably tried to vote for the best candidate that we always, we just feel that it's gotten too party against party and not Americans for Americans.
So let me ask you this, Doug, if I could. When you're talking about you didn't see the fire you wanted, what do you mean by that? What are you looking for?
I feel like Obama has almost gotten beaten down over the last 4 years, and it just seems to show, I saw a lack of fire in his speech. I don't see the same passion that I saw 4 years ago.
Well, let's put it to our guest, Charles Franklin.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things, and one, of course, is that Bill Clinton remains an incredible master of the political speech. And, you know, in effect, for all the talk about Obama as a great communicator, Bill Clinton is also one. And so we saw two world masters there in successive nights. I think that the Obama speech, from my point of view at least, did spend a lot of time on elements of policy and contrast, which was a strong partisan claim, but not a soaring rhetoric, not the kind of big picture things. And in terms of sort of a vision for the future and how do you get to that vision, that's an area where I think there were a lot of details, but maybe the big picture wasn't as clear. And maybe some element of that is what Doug is looking for would have seen as more of that.
Do you think that I'm not sure how to put this exactly. I mean, the fact that he's been president now for 3.5 years or so, that's got to change your outlook on things.
Yeah, it certainly does. And I would actually point to the last 2 years with a Republican House that – one of the elements that was not much in the speech last night was how the partisan gridlock that we have had for the last 2 years would change in any way in a new Congress. He talked, I don't think, at all about any prospect for Democrats taking the majority of the House, for example, and talked very little about any races other than his own. So I think that was one element that was somewhat missing from the speech. Aside from voters choosing different presidential candidates, how voters choose in the Congress is awfully important for what kinds of policies can be achieved going forward.
Got another phone call here. Muhammad joins us from Winona, Minnesota, and we just lost Muhammad. So let's move on to Todd, who is with us from Green Bay. Hi, Todd.
Hi, good morning. I think the speech was about what I expected it would be. It was more nebulous kinds of speech-making without any kind of specifics, and it was more of the message, I guess, that you can just expect. You can almost write the speech for Obama before he gives it. It's just so predictable. And the thing that I think is probably the saddest part of the whole campaign, last one and this one, is that still nobody has asked Obama what kind of change he intends. What are his plans? We're still letting him more or less off the hook. The media is letting him off the hook by never asking him any of the specific questions. And I point out the incidents of at the end of the last campaign, about a week before the election, you had Tom Brokaw and Charlie Rose staring across the desk at each other and saying, you know, it's amazing how little we know about Barack Obama. We really don't even know his worldview. And the problem is they never asked. They just said, hope and change, and he's black. Good enough for us.
So he didn't convince you last night, Todd?
No. I mean, until he fleshes out something that he intends to do, which unfortunately he can't, because if he told everybody what he wants to do, I mean, we've seen enough of where he wants to go with this country that if he laid out the entire plan for us, I think everybody would run for the hills. Nobody would ever vote for him.
Todd, thanks for the call. Charles Franklin. Todd sounds like he had some issues with the president before the speech and doesn't sound like he was swayed one bit last night.
No, and perhaps not too surprisingly. I think there is one thing here that deserves some recognition, and that is that every incumbent president running for reelection has something that the challengers don't have, and that is a four-year record. And so in that sense, I think one answer to the concerns or issues Todd is raising is to ask Todd whether he thinks the last 4 years is ambiguous and unclear. And reading between some of Todd's comments, I think it doesn't sound to me like he thinks it's unclear what Obama has done. He disagrees with it. So I think the point here would be seeing the record and either defending it or failing to defend it. But there really is a concrete record out there that every incumbent either enjoys or suffers from.
We're going to take one more call. We've got news coming up from Wisconsin Public Radio at the bottom of the hour. And before that, let's go to Winona again. And looks like Muhammad is back with us. And Muhammad, good morning.
Good morning. I listened to the speech yesterday, and I have not voted for Obama last time. But based on what I have heard yesterday, I think he made a very compelling case. He was very clear, actually I would say crystal clear, in his message on where we are and where we need to be. I think you can see a very clear distinction between Obama and also Romney, based on just the speech yesterday and President Clinton's speech.
Okay, and so you say you didn't vote for President Obama in 08. What has changed your mind in the interim?
Actually, just the solid plan. Does he and the steady steps, does he moving? I think we are building a very solid economy. I think we are building a foundation that will carry us for a very, very, very long time.
Muhammad, thanks so much for the call. Charles Franklin, unlike Todd, he found the president's speech very convincing. And it's almost like a beauty in the eye of the beholder thing.
Well, I think it's a good illustration that different people come to political candidates with different views, both partisan and evaluating how they what their record is and the clarity of their promises. And, you know, differences of opinion are normal, right? We don't all agree. There's never a consensus that one candidate is right. There's always differences of views. And so to the extent that we, if we like a candidate, we tend to hear things that reinforce what we've liked about them before, partly because that's why we like them. And if we have hear someone that we don't like, we tend to discount things. So, you know, the Obama speech had a lot of specifics in it, but if you don't like Obama, maybe you think that that was pretty vacuous, a set of vacuous promises. An Obama supporter could look at the same speech and praise it for ticking off topic and point after point after point. There is so much in politics that is in the eye of the beholder that plays a really big role.
All right, we're going to take a break and catch up with news from Wisconsin Public Radio. Also going to be catching up, I think, we'll have some new numbers for you from the August Jobs Report and get a reaction to from that from Charles Franklin as well. We're going to continue talking about the speeches last night from President Obama and also from Representative Tammy Baldwin. She had a pretty premier spot at last night's convention, and we'll hear a little bit, get some reaction to that as well. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm here today filling in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 25 minutes now before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, and I am here today filling in for Joy Cardine. We are hopeful that she will be back and healthy again on Monday morning. Charles Franklin is with us this hour, visiting professor of law and public policy and the director of the Marquette University Law School Poll. We're going to be talking with him, have been talking with him, about a reaction to the speeches last night at the Democratic National Convention from President Obama. We'll be getting to the speech from Representative Baldwin in just a few moments. But as long as we've got him trapped in the studio with me right now, we've got some new job numbers out this morning that, particularly in the wake of the speech last night, people have been watching very, very closely. And the headline I've got in front of me, August Jobs Report misses expectations at 96,000. Analysts had been expecting 130,000. But, and here's another but here, the unemployment rate did edge down to about 8.1%. So, Charles Franklin, it sounds like another one of those months where we're getting mixed signals.
Yeah, I think so. And one where the jobs number, that 96,000, mm-hmm. is a bit below the 130,000 or so that economists had expected. Over the year, we've averaged about 139,000 jobs a month. So 96 is a noticeable shortfall of that. You have to understand on the percentage unemployed going down a little bit that, first of all, these two numbers come from different data sources, and so they don't have to go with each other. But the other is that the unemployment rate is also affected by the percentage of people who are actively looking for jobs or are in the labor force. And those numbers, according to this release, edged down just a little bit. So that's also part of a lower unemployment rate is slightly more people not actively looking for work during the month as well. The key point is this is not the jobs report that President Obama wanted to see this morning because it points further to a weak job situation going into the fall and the election, and at a time when we just spent 3 days talking about a slow but improving situation, we still see improvement in the sense that this is now the 30th month with job gains.
Mm-hmm.
But those job gains are not nearly the really strong job gains that any president would like to see.
And when you hear the numbers like this, sort of month after month, it doesn't feel like progress.
That's right. The interesting thing on this post-recession period is that our growth rate in GDP, gross domestic product, the overall value of the economy, has remained positive for a long time. You know, once we got past mostly 2009, we've seen continuous steady growth. But we've seen steady growth at a modest level, around 2%, give or take a little bit. In some previous recessions, we came roaring out of them with growth rates as 7% during the Reagan recovery back in the 1980s, for example. Economists point out that when you see a fiscal crisis, a monetary crisis, as we saw with the banking sector, that historically recoveries have been much slower and much longer. But that's cold comfort to people who are in difficulty. Finally, if you look across a lot of different economic statistics, indicators, many of them are running about on a par now with where they were before the recession. But one area that absolutely is not is home values. And that's where an awful lot of the public has most of their net worth. And the fall in housing values and prices, which has now stabilized but has only begun to inch up nowhere close to where it was pre-recession, is one of those areas that I think an awful lot of the public is hit hard by, limiting their ability to sell a home, limiting the amount of equity and value that they have in the home. So there's a mixed picture there. The jobs picture is slow recovery. Income has been improving a little bit, and GDP has been improving a bit. But, you know, where we really are is in the mixed picture. If you think about 1984 with Ronald Reagan running for re-election, the first 2 years of his term were very bad economically. But the second 2 years was this strong recovery, and he could run on a theme of it's morning again in America. That was pretty unambiguous. Bill Clinton in 1996 had an unambiguously strong economy that helped boost him, whereas Jimmy Carter had an unambiguously poor economy in 1980. This is a year that's that half glass half full, glass half empty, 30 months of gains, but at a level that is not dramatically driving down unemployment. So that's the difficulty that we're seeing.
Yeah, and sort of from the insult to injury department, I just got a note here from our producer. June jobs growth revised down now from 64,000 to 45,000. July also revised down from 163,000 to 141. So as those revisions come out, you know, on the heels of this,
right,
it seems even more mixed.
Exactly. And, you know, and also the month-to-month fluctuation that you just saw in the numbers you just cited, only 40-something thousand versus 100-and-something thousand. So we're seeing fluctuation from month-to-month as well. You know, jobs growth has been a problem for a while in the recovery following the recession in 2001, in the early George W. Bush period. We actually saw, I think it was 6 quarters in which employment actually edged downward after the recession. You know, the term jobless recovery is something that's not new to this period, but it points to that fundamental fragility of American employment at a time when corporations are making good profits, but it's not being translated into jobs. And that, of course, is part of the debate between the parties right now. Governor Romney says he has a plan for how to stimulate job growth with companies, and President Obama says he has a plan. And where voters are left is to try to decide which of those two approaches to stimulating the economy, building jobs, which of those two approaches do you believe? Whose economic theory, if you will, is more convincing to you?
So as we think about those job numbers for a second, and then think back to the president's speech last night, and you know, change is difficult, change is hard. Was he anticipating this?
You know, who knows?
I mean, he probably didn't know, but I mean,
no. Well, the numbers are actually quite closely guarded, so they're certainly always estimates. But you know, you wouldn't want to craft a speech in which it could look particularly bad the next morning. these numbers are bad enough for the president and for the speech, but he didn't reach for a big number last night talking about slow, long recovery. We're not going to get there overnight. Is crafted to speak to the very facts that we've been discussing, that there is positive growth here. It's been positive growth for more than almost 2.5 years now, but it's just not very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And for people with houses underwater or people who are long-term unemployed, there's not a very bright picture on the horizon in the short term. What Obama's speech last night was pushing was that question of whether his approach to dealing with this is more convincing than Governor Romney's approach. And again, that's where the next 2 months are going to ultimately force the public to make a choice between which of those do they think is more credible.
Another big speech we heard last night was from Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin, of course, running for the Senate here in Wisconsin against Tommy Thompson, Governor Thompson. And she had a pretty premier slot at the Democratic National Convention. Let's start out. What were the reasons for that slot? I mean, Wisconsin's in play, obviously. It's a big race here. Is she important? Does she symbolize something beyond?
I think there are multiple reasons. One is that the Senate race, this is a seat that's been held by Democrat Senator Cole for a long time, so it's very important for Democrats to continue to hold that. Control of the majority in the U.S. Senate is a close contest this year. And Tammy Baldwin, as a woman, as an openly gay candidate, speaks to constituencies within the party and to supporters of gays and lesbians, whether they're gay or straight. And so as a spokesperson for those important constituencies, she was important. The other part, though, is that it gave a Senate candidate a forum to state her case to a national audience, but also to those of us here in the state. So as we talk about her speech, as the print and broadcast media cover that speech, it echoes. And, of course, the Thompson campaign was quick to rebut some of the things in it with their own press release.
We've got a clip from the speech last night, and one of the themes she talked a lot about, and she referred directly to Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, and ask the question whether they represent Wisconsin values.
Well, I'm here to tell you that they don't speak for all of Wisconsin. And I want you to hear about the Wisconsin I know.
There you go, the Wisconsin I know. How is that for a strategy?
Well, it was a theme she wove through it's a very short speech, but wove through it, that there's a different side to Wisconsin than the Republican side. The issues that Governor Walker, former Governor Thompson, and Mitt Romney campaign on here in the state don't speak for everyone in the state. You know, it's an obvious truth these days that the state is very polarized. And so on many, many issues, we're split about 45-45 with 10% holding the balance of who gets the majority on any election or issue. And so in speaking for union workers and manufacturing workers that Baldwin argues have been hurt by unfair trade practices, for example, you saw her developing a theme about this other Wisconsin, the ones that don't agree with Governor Walker and Governor Romney. So I thought she laid those things out. The other thing she did that echoed or maybe previewed President Obama's speech was to emphasize the issue of taxes and the choice between approaches that give tax breaks to corporations and those who are well off on the theory that that will stimulate jobs versus more equitable taxes being raised on the wealthy as a matter of equity. And so in her talking about that, she also touched on themes of the Obama administration and the Obama speech, particularly the issue of whether the Bush tax cut should be allowed to expire, thus raising taxes by 3 or 4 percentage points on those with incomes over $250,000, or whether taxes should be reduced further for the well-off. That's an argument between the parties, and one where polling has shown many voters, most voters, a majority, including a lot of Republicans, think that a tax increase on those with high incomes is okay. That's an argument very much before us in the presidential race. But Baldwin was also linking that to Thompson and Thompson's post-gubernatorial career as a consultant and executive in business and in Washington. So again, that's a debate that we'll have between Thompson and Baldwin throughout the fall. But it echoes this question about what role do the well-off people play in job creation, and what role in deficit reduction should some tax increases play versus cuts in a wide variety of programs.
Take a break right now. In return, we'll finish up our discussion about some of the great speeches we heard last night, or not so great, depending on your viewpoint, speeches from the Democratic National Convention. Wisconsin weather, it's going to be cloudy and cool today with a chance of rain, highs in the 60s tonight, decreasing clouds back down into the 40s. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nine minutes now before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 4 o'clock this afternoon, it is the Your Views on the News with at-issue host Ben Marins. They'll take a look back at the week that was. That's coming up after 4 o'clock. Coming up after 8 this morning, by the way, we'll be taking a look back at the week 2, specifically the week at the Democratic National Convention. So we'll be talking about speeches for the rest of this hour, then the convention from a broader perspective during the course of the next hour. Charles Franklin is with us this hour, and we've been talking about some of the speeches that we heard last night that we witnessed. And one of the questions, we were talking about Tammy Baldwin's speech right before the break, and you touched upon those tax issues, and both Tammy Baldwin, President Obama, talking about the tax rates in the context of their races. Is this the kind of, I'm remembering back to the Clinton race, you know, it's the economy, stupid kind of thing. Are there lots of mixed messages out here right now, or do you see the campaigns really winnowing down to some of the core messages that they're going to take? And are people hearing those streamlined messages?
Well, I think we may see some streamlining, if you will. Whenever you have an incumbent running, the idea that it's a referendum on their performance mm-hmm. is really appealing. That's why Clinton in 92, it's the economy stupid notion, had so much going for it in the sense that simply criticizing then-President George Herbert Walker Bush for his management of the economy was a natural campaign theme. Certainly, I think we're going to see a lot of that on the Republican side, that this is not a successful recovery. As I said earlier, this is a glass half full, half empty, so there are really two sides to that argument. But it's still one that, with an incumbent in office, is a natural way to go at it. But I think the overlay that we're seeing here are the sharp ideological differences between the parties. With the Tea Party movement having a big effect on the Republican Party, a new wave of conservatism within the party following President Bush's administration in the last 4 years. We've seen a party that has moved substantially to the right, to the more conservative positions, and that's opened up a bigger gulf between the two parties. And so voters are going to be called on to do two things simultaneously. One is a referendum on the Obama administration, but at the same time, choosing between two very different approaches to policy and government going forward. And I think that's the sort of dilemma people face, is they have these two things to deal with at once, not just one.
But I think I forget who said this, but there's a stark choice. I mean, people have sort of said that.
Certainly, and that was one of the themes that Obama spelled out last night. He would like it to be a stark choice here in the sense that, you know, if the economic record is ambiguous, the starkness of the choice is not. Now, it may well be that some voters clearly prefer the Romney conservative approach or the Republicans. Other voters prefer the Democratic and Obama approach. So there's a real divide there, and that's where we're getting into this game of inches where the two parties are so evenly balanced and so strongly supportive of their nominees. Over 90% of Republicans are voting for Romney. 90-plus percent of Democrats are voting for Obama. We've got a very divided electorate there.
It's time for a quick call. Let's take Patricia, who joins us from Madison. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Before I make my comment, I want to encourage your listeners to go to www.factcheck.org to check the veracity of the statements made by both candidates. I think that would be very informative. In his speech last night, Obama said that Romney had no foreign experience. Well, neither did Obama 4 years ago, let alone any economic experience.
Patricia, thanks for that. And true that, you know.
Certainly. And, you know, that's one of the advantages that presidents always have, incumbents. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the fact that they may be saddled with their record, but certainly any president after 4 years has foreign policy experience. You certainly heard a lot of that at the convention, that Osama bin Laden is dead and GM is alive. It was a nice capsule summary of the argument combining both the foreign policy and the domestic.
But I guess the real question is, do people care?
Oh, I think at the margin, foreign policy does matter. But when the economy is in tough shape, we tend to focus in on our domestic affairs. I think you know, voters are overwhelmingly positive about Osama bin Laden being killed, but that is not the day-to-day concern in the way that the economy and the future of taxes and policy and the deficit fall. We haven't talked about the deficit very much. It's interesting. In our polling in Wisconsin, as well as national polling, 82% of people say that the deficit is extremely important or very important. And yet, when you ask, would you be willing to see cuts in defense, or health care spending, an increase in taxes, that near unanimity of support that it's important goes way down. Only 25% willing to see cuts in Medicare, for example, as a means of balancing the budget. And so, again, this is where a lot of the debate could come, is we all want to see a reduction of the deficit. What are you willing to do to accomplish that? We've got 60 days, I think it is, to decide that question.
And 60 days indeed. And Charles Franklin, I imagine we'll be talking to you during the course of those 60 days. But thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
It's been great. Charles Franklin has been with us, visiting professor of law and public policy and director of the Marquette University Law School Poll, also the co-founder of Pollster.com and the founder of PollsandVotes.com. Bill Martin produced this hour. And we had Cynthia Schuster, who provided us with on-air production. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'm here filling in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.